This is a football fans podcast talking about the world's greatest football team from CelticUnderground.net. We're the world's longest running football fans podcast and have been spewing out this inane drivel now for 12 seasons. But if you keep downloading it, we'll keep producing it. Listeners to the last podcast with myself and Hullboy will know that it was just part one of 2 hours of chat that he and I had the other night. We discussed the Linfield game, the Rosenborg game, the Supreme Court decision and the banners. And because it ran into 2 hours, we decided to split it up into two podcasts. So the last podcast was the football and the Supreme Court decision. This one is about banners. Now, I don't know if, like me, I'm a bit fed up with the nature of the debate about this on social media. There's been very much Green Brigade bad, board good, or Green Brigade good, board bad, and anybody who disagrees is an arsehole. So we tried to have a discussion where we stripped it back to, let's look at this and try to be a bit more dispassionate. So hopefully that comes across in the podcast. Anyway, enough of me. I did talk about the new music and the cover versions. This week's cover versions are playing underneath just now. Bella McKenzie's Associates with the cover of Heart of Glass by Blondie. I'm sure St. Anthony is turning. It's probably switched off already because he can't stand the blasphemy of this cover of a Blondie classic. And in the end, we've got Olsen with a cover of Push the Button by whoever the three-girl band is that I can't mind off the top of my head. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him again, Hullboy. So, one of the other things that came out of the Linfield game, and I think everybody listening already knows where this is going, is first leg, we decide not to take any tickets. And there just seemed to be a confusing, obviously three parties involved in this. Well, first of all, not just that we refuse to take any tickets, that the game can't take place on the designated date set by UEFA. And then, regardless of when the date is, we refuse to take tickets. There's three people involved in giving feedback about why that is. Linfield, ourselves, and the police service of Northern Ireland. And then on the day, we end up getting a section for the people who bought tickets in the Linfield end. So talk me through all your thoughts on that.
I think the sequencing of this is important in terms of not just the events surrounding that first leg, but also the kind of the knock-on effect into the home leg and things that happen there. My view is quite clear on this, is that UEFA have a competition. They set the dates for when the games in that competition are due to be played. Mm-hmm. And everybody should adhere to that. And if they can't adhere to that, there are two things that should happen. One is, the team that can't adhere to it forfeits their place in the competition. Or, as the rules allow, the game could be played on the same day at a different venue, and that would be a kind of a neutral venue. So that's my view on that. Now, we all know why the game supposedly couldn't take place on the 11th or 12th of July. But what we're less clear about is who actually made that decision. And by that decision, I mean the three parties that you've mentioned. Because I think it's really important in terms of Celtic to actually understand what their input was to that decision.
Yep.
And we're not talking about the decision to not take tickets. We're talking about the decision that actually made that game change from the 11th, 12th of July to the Friday of the same week at the time that it was played. And my own view is, and this might seem harsh, but if you strip everything else away and ignore all the other factors, Linfield had no excuse not to play that game on the 11th or 12th of July. There was no excuse. There was no footballing reason as to why they couldn't play that game on the 11th or 12th of July. So the fact that they then, in conjunction with others, said that they couldn't play that game on the 11th or 12th of July, in my logic, that immediately means that the game is either forfeited by Linfield or it's moved to a different venue on one of those two same dates. Now, I think, you know, I'm always reluctant to try and kind of attribute blame, and, you know, I try and look for the logic in these things. But my own view is, whoever was involved in those discussions from Celtic got that initial thing completely wrong. Completely wrong.
Yeah, because...
And the other thing that I would add is that maybe not so much Linfield as a club, but the PSNI and others involved in kind of negotiations in the north are just well-seasoned pros at this. Not going to digress, but we, you know, we all know what's happening with the DUP and the Tories.
Yep.
And they've been kind of taking these stances on issues for years. And I think somebody from Celtic walked into that kind of environment and either completely caved in or just didn't understand how to negotiate that Celtic remained strong in the outcome of whatever was discussed. And the thing that makes it more annoying is that we know that the Celtic supporters liaison officer was not involved in those discussions.
I mean, initially, there was discussion about the game will need to be the 11th because we can't possibly have Celtic play the game on the 12th. That was in the first few hours of it.
But that's irrelevant.
No,
UEFA have set the dates, and that's when the game has got to be played.
And the gate at that point, I think it was still could have been Tuesday the 11th or Wednesday the 12th.
Mm.
And there was discussion of. And from my memory was, we said we were not taking tickets before the game was moved to the Friday.
Not sure that's correct. I think it was all done at the same time.
Was it all done at the same time? Because initially I thought, are we saying we're not taking tickets because it's just the complete wrong atmosphere for our fans to be going into? And have we been... And again, this gets back to, I understand, and you know, your point of, you're always trying to look for the logical explanation rather than the conspiratorial explanation for something.
Mm.
So I'm the same. I'm looking, thinking, okay, so in public, people are saying one thing, but I can well imagine in private. So the police service of Northern Ireland don't particularly publicly want to say we couldn't cope with Celtic playing on that night because we're already dealing with Bampots everywhere else. So I'm thinking, is the issue that they're saying this, but yeah, in private there's a heavier conversation going on with Celtic?
Mm.
Equally, getting back to your point of, well, I'm very sorry for your personal circumstances, but I don't give a toss.
Exactly right, and that's where Celtic, whoever the individuals are, in my view, that's where they've caved in. Because actually, if you move it slightly away from the football sphere of things, you know, we all know, we know what goes on the 11th and the 12th, but a lot of people still in the UK don't realise what goes on the 11th and the 12th. And to my mind, you know, not that Celtic should have done this to highlight it, but the game being moved would have highlighted, and people in the wider media would have commented on why the game was being moved. And that's the last thing that even organisations like the PSNI want. You know, we all see what happens on the 11th and the 12th. You know, where you've got the fire brigade over there who are actually kind of hosing down apartments opposite a bonfire that's out of control.
Any other part of the UK, would not be allowed to take place.
Exactly right.
And people would accept that it's, well, people, local people might be agitated, but the general mood of consensus would be, well, only an idiot would want that to take place there. It's too close to housing, your bonfire's too big, all these circumstances. And you might have had, you know, if the guy was, you know, was a Tory councillor who'd organised it, you might have your Daily Mail going on about health and safety gone mad. But in general, it wouldn't be allowed.
No. No. And I think that's the thing for me, that we all know why that game couldn't take place on the, or it was proposed that that game couldn't take place on the 11th and the 12th, but that's not Celtic's problem.
Yeah.
And Celtic should have just stuck to the UEFA rules and said, look, this is what the rule says. It says if you can't play the game at your ground on that date, then it's either relocated to a neutral venue. The only other thing that was discussed, if I recall, was the swapping of the legs.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, Celtic, you know, why should they swap the legs to, you know, cover over something that's going on in that community that actually is quite abhorrent?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think Celtic's position should have been, hi, Mr. Linfield, nice to meet you. Isn't this a jolly set of circumstances we find ourselves in? We're at home second. And we've actually planned out our programme. And we have a glamour friendly on the Saturday. So, tough titty, you're not moving it. And we're not swapping the games because it's our preference. And if you've got a real problem with not being able to do it, that's not our fault. I'm really sorry that you live in 1900 and something, but that's not our fault.
Yep, spot on. And you know, there's probably not much more to say on that. As I say, this is all a sequence of events, but there's probably not much more to say on that. But you know, we all know the notion of cause and effect. But to my mind, that was the initial cause.
So you move on from that. What are your thoughts on Celtic not taking tickets?
Well, again, that was compounded by the movement of the game to the Friday, and at the point that I saw the Celtic statement saying that they weren't going to take tickets, I just thought that, you know, that was just completely unbelievable. That they couldn't take the tickets because, okay, I'm not too overfair, but you know, a fair few folk over in Belfast, and so you kind of get a feel for things over there. I've been over there over the years, and for all the fact that there's still kind of quite divisive things going on, you know, people get on and manage things, and one of the things that they get on and manage is local football rivalry through games that are played at Windsor Park. So I'm aware over the years of kind of Cliftonville supporters going to see their team play Linfield at Windsor Park, and there's no problem. And you know that there's no problem because actually the way in which supporters are routed to the various parts of the ground means that the two sets of supporters are kept apart. And you kind of think, well, do you know what? We know of a similar city like that. It's called Glasgow.
Yeah.
It's all properly policed. So why Celtic felt that they had to come to a decision that says we will not take tickets is it's just beyond me. And not only that, what it did do was it actually antagonised lots and lots of Celtic supporters who live in Ireland, who come over to Scotland to watch Celtic, not just every other week, but in some cases every week. And they couldn't go and see a team, or they couldn't go see their team play, you know, in some cases, 2 miles down the road.
So that moves us to the home leg. Your cause and effect part of it.
Yeah.
And obviously there's some shit has hit the fan since the home leg. I have to say, for a variety of reasons, first of all, 1 minute before I was due to leave the house to go to the game, I suddenly realised that, because I do the bucket collection the last game of season, what I tend to do is I take the ticket that the bucket collectors get given for free, and I give my season book to my nephew.
Oh, right, okay.
And the money, and my nephew gives me the money for the ticket, and I put it in the bucket, right? So 1 minute before leaving the house, I realise I don't have my match day ticket. And it's my brother's, who's on holiday in Lisbon. So I managed to find somebody at Celtic Park who could, provided I got there at a certain time, could facilitate me getting into my seat. But it meant breaking my neck to get there. I was doing that thing of sprinting. You know, I'm so unfit. I was doing that thing of a 47-year-old who never does any exercise, sprint to the game, could feel my lungs want to rip out my chest, and thinking, this is heart attack stuff. This is when you're reading the paper and you think, what an idiot, 47-year-old who never does any exercise. Anyway, so I just got into my seat. I was oblivious to any Green Brigade banners or anything until I got home and read stuff online.
All right, okay.
So talk me through the Green Brigade banners.
Well, the Green Brigade banners, to my right, before we talk about the specifics of the banners, one of the things about football which some people seem to have forgotten is that football is partly built over the years on football rivalry. And within that rivalry, there are things that opposing supporters do towards each other during the game to wind up, antagonise, get a rise out of, however you want to put it. And if you look at the Green Brigade, since their formation, but prior to the Green Brigade, that has been going on for years at Celtic Park and Celtic support at away games, winding up the opposition. And the most obvious thing is singing songs about the opposition's team or the opposition's player. So we're kind of kidding ourselves if, you know, this is all new stuff that the Green Brigade have brought in, mm-hmm. You know. And okay, I think a lot of people would agree, one of the best ones ever was the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Well, you know, it wasn't politically motivated in that sense, but it was just the perfect wind-up, and it was intended for two sets of supporters. It was intended for the home support, us, to see what a fantastic, you know, get it right up here, the Green Brigade could produce. But it also sent a strong message to the old Rangers support that actually, you know, this was coming to you. So when Celtic play Linfield, you can say all you want about, well, should we bother winding up a team that is broadly irrelevant to Scottish football, no real rivalry. But actually, if you look at the makeup of Linfield supporters, if you look at the history of their club, the links with other football clubs, one of which is based in Glasgow, then I think it was perfectly okay for the Green Brigade to produce something that was going to wind up those supporters, who themselves were coming armed with their own version of wind-ups. You know, there was 1,500 of them. They weren't coming as some kind of like benign kind of holiday makers for a day out in Glasgow. So there's just some principles there, and I think the decision makers at the club and those who are kind of like policing our support have completely lost sight of some of those things. Now, in terms of the content, there's some obvious connections. People can make some obvious connections as they want to kind of political issues. But essentially, particularly with that opposition, I don't think you can fully remove some of the politics of what people experience in that part of the world. A lot of Celtic sports links have traditionally been not to paramilitary organisations or anything like that, but simply the kind of prejudice that has been in place over the years. So that
feeds into the aspect of UEFA's part in this. I don't mean specifically UEFA's part in the Celtic Linfield game, but UEFA's part in. UEFA would like to glorify grounds with an atmosphere and grounds with passion. But UEFA having strict liability for anything that doesn't fall within the very tight confines of what UEFA want.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the problem then arises, surely.
Well, you can say that, but the thing is, for me, I can't speak for the Green Brigade and the people that are in the Green Brigade, and I don't know how they reach the decisions that they reach. But even amongst other football supporters, there is a complete kind of condemnation of UEFA and just the hypocrisy of their decision making, really. So they're dishing out these petty fines all the time, but they themselves are applying all kinds of double standards. We know that they're kind of so deeply embroiled in kind of various types of corruption through their kind of supposedly elected representatives and members. So I think quite rightly a lot of people just say, well, do you know what? I don't give a stuff about UEFA. Yeah, they probably do make the rules, but the rules are just completely, uncaring, if you like, of the game and how the game traditionally has been seen by ordinary supporters. What do they want? Do they want football tournaments, or do they just want an entertainment industry?
But isn't that what, getting back to your FIFA/UEFA corruption stuff? FIFA and UEFA both make the vast amount of money that they make out of corporate sponsorship.
Yeah.
And major corporations want highly popular but non-controversial messages on screen.
Yeah.
Which is probably the reason why UEFA have gone down the route that they've gone down of, we don't want anything that could be construed as political, or political is the wrong thing, because I'm sure people listening to this will then say, but what about the contradiction of when they put up when they did the stuff for Nelson Mandela's passing?
Yeah,
but it's, they don't want anything that doesn't fit with what is the current acceptable political message. So for argument's sake, having an LGBT thing would not be a problem for UEFA to do, because that would fit with what UEFA are currently comfortable with being a political message. But yeah, 25 plus years ago, if a player had lifted a jersey with an LGBT message on it, he'd have been fined.
Yeah, exactly. But and I think there's a deeper issue here about the corporatisation of football. You know, that we've seen it over the years. You know, we were going to games when we were standing on the terraces, and you know, okay, you can look back with some fondness, but also you can say, well, actually, you know, sometimes it wasn't particularly pleasant if it was freezing cold or whatever. But you can't ignore that, you know, group of supporters who've always seen football in that kind of paradigm. I'm not talking about the fact that they're unhappy to be sitting now, but it you know, it's a pretty simple game, but surrounding it, there's some pretty kind of simple things that go on in terms of how you support your team and how you sing and how you chant and some of the things that you do say at football games. And UEFA, and particularly in places like England with the English FA, the way they have corporatised football and chased the money has just, you know, almost kind of ripped up the football. And you know, I know of people in Scotland, I know of people here in England who've actually given up watching top flight professional football because it's just being sanitised in that way. So the thing for me is that there's all that, and then if you look at it, Celtic actually haven't been served well through that corporatisation of football in terms of UEFA competitions. Okay, we get mega millions if we qualify, but look what we have to do to go through and qualify. And you know, the UEFA are not really running a fair competition in that sense. What they're doing is that they're pandering to the biggest, most successful European football countries to maximise TV revenues. And that's at the expense of clubs like Celtic.
But you may all... I'm sure there's plenty of people listening to this saying, I agree. But there'll be a chunk of them saying, I agree, but... It's their rules and it's their competition, and if we want to play in their competition, the very point you've just made about we're lower down the food chain, we have to accept that we have to play by their rules.
Mm. But the thing is, I've not seen anything from the Green Brigade or any Celtic support that is racist in nature, sexist in nature. Some of the things that you see across other European countries, both on a regular basis in their domestic football, but also in UEFA competitions. So for me, and this may actually be getting blown up out of proportion because Scotland's a relatively small country, the media will pick up on this because there are not many other stories around at the moment, so it'll kind of inflate the issue. But actually, if you look at that banner, and if you look at that banner and say, yeah, that banner, there were no subtleties around it. It was just a pure celebration of, you know, a paramilitary period in the north of Ireland. Even if you took it on that on those values, which I don't think it was intended, and I don't believe it was done in that way, it would not be on the scale of some of the things that you see across other European nations at football games in terms of the out-and-out kind of like sectarianism and racism. It wouldn't register on the scale.
Now, on that regard, I can't remember what game it was. One of our, in inverted commas, illicit banners that we have been fined for in the last few years. I can't remember who told me, but somebody told me that basically a Scottish journalist went up to the UEFA delegate,
yeah,
pointed out the banner, pointed out what was wrong with the banner for Celtic to then get,
yeah,
reported by UEFA.
Yeah. And that's it. I think a lot of this is all the Lee Wallace effect. A lot of people are actually kind of, who's kind of grassing us in on these things, because that's what a lot of this is.
Oh, and my mate, a Rangers supporting mate, sent me a text, which I had a lot of sympathy for, which is the thing that pisses me off most at the moment in Scottish football. It was around this banner, is the sweetie wife culture that we've got into.
Absolutely.
We have people from both sides. There are Celtic people that I see on social media who do the same thing.
Yeah.
They watch a Rangers, so I'll comment only for Celtic people because I don't follow any Rangers people on social media. They will watch a Rangers game with no Celtic involvement just to find out if they've been offended by something the Rangers fans
exactly
have done.
Exactly right. And to be honest, I've got no time for those people, and we shouldn't kid ourselves. You know, online, social media, there are some Celtic supporters who are just permanently on the offended bus.
I met with someone this week. And I asked them, we were talking about something, and they had a reasonably senior job, and I asked them why they'd moved overseas to do their job, and they said, well, because, they were older than me, they said, because I'm Catholic and I wouldn't have reached the level I've reached if I'd stayed in Scotland. Right? There was a time when that was the case. There was a time when there were certain employers that didn't employ you in the west of Scotland if you were a Catholic. But I'm now 47. None of that has affected me. And the reason why I say that is, yes, there are issues and there are still things and there are too many orange walks and things like that. However, I'm just getting fed up with the Celtic fans who are in the permanent offended world. Yep. And the Rangers fans who are doing exactly the same.
Yep.
That for the Rangers fans, it seems to come from the perspective of, if it wasn't for the pesky Celtic kids, they would have gotten away with it over the whole tax cheating thing. So they seem to live permanently in the world of, their whole world is based around catching Celtic out to report Celtic for something to get their own back for their club going bust.
Mm.
But this whole sweetie wife culture of, I'm looking for a way. And so actually, when I then got home and saw the one or two people complaining about the banner that I hadn't seen anything about because of where I sit in the North Stand, I have to stand up and lean over to see the Green Brigade, so I didn't see the banner and I got in late and all of that stuff. And so I had to then do a search online, and the only searches that were coming up was from Rangers fans saying, at UEFA, have you seen this banner?
Yep. But the thing is, and I don't know whether you saw it, but I put something on Twitter. I put the Taggart thing on Twitter with a quote saying, there's been a banner. And I put that on kind of maybe an hour and a half after the game, because I could tell, I knew where this was going to go. And okay, it was my weak attempt at a bit of kind of like sarcastic humour. But the thing is, there hadn't been a murder. There'd just been a banner. And I knew that because there'd been that banner, the whole thing was going to get escalated because of that kind of like whole sweetie wife thing that you're talking about, and people being on offended buses. Just forget it. For me personally, I thought it was a great wind-up, and the Linfield fans were antagonised by it. And I personally, I'm from that kind of generation where I've seen kind of like football rivalry in that kind of way more than perhaps it's seen now. But if you get it up the opposition, well done. That's the way I've seen it.
The counter to that, though, again, getting back to, we've had 10 charges in the last 6 years. We know what UEFA are like, and we know what the sweetie wife culture that's likely to grass us into UEFA is like.
Yep.
We know that the club do fear that we are much closer to having a sections closed forced upon us, which I'll come back to with my theory on that in a minute. We are much closer to a section closed down being forced upon us than we were every time one of these offences take place. So the counter argument that people would put forward is, okay, I get your point and I agree with you about UEFA, but we know what UEFA are like. We know the types of banner that we will get slaughtered by for having done.
Yeah.
And we know that in a UEFA environment, we will get more criticism than an SPFL environment.
Yeah.
Can we not save the banner for December against Ross County as opposed to a Champions League qualifier?
Yeah. Okay, here's a question for you. Do you think that banner would have been produced at the home leg if Celtic had been given an allocation of tickets for Linfield?
No, but I do think that's what's... My whole theory around why Celtic didn't take tickets is Celtic feared that type of banner would be produced at the first leg.
Okay. If it was produced at the first leg, what do you think would have happened? You see, I told you I'm a man of logic,
yeah.
Harry.
Oh, I know. Look, to be honest, I don't know what would have happened. From nothing in particular to we'd have been slaughtered for having done that in Northern Ireland and risking all the challenges that produces.
Yeah, but if you, again, going back to the original thing, leaving aside whether you thought that banner was right or wrong, if that had been produced at the first leg, what would have happened is that the Celtic support in the official allocation would have left Windsor Park without any problems, go back towards the Falls Road, which is where they would have come from the fan zone, and the PSNI would have been well capable of policing that event to make sure that two sets of supporters didn't meet. So by the time you get to the second leg, if that scenario happened at the first leg, there may well have been a banner, but it might have been a different banner. It might not have been as antagonistic. It might have been more, I don't know, jokey or whatever, you know, a bit more of a put down. I don't know.
I heard all this, you know, I've seen people say, oh, people are talking about this as a small minority with the banner and the Republican message, but 50,000 fans were singing. Well, it wasn't 50,000 fans, but I get the point. 50,000 fans were singing.
A lot of people were singing Broad Black Brimmer.
Yes.
I can tell you.
Yeah. And your point
more than normal.
Your point about consequences and so I've seen people write this online as a mitigation. And I understand this is a mitigation that their fans trying to hit Lee Griffiths with a bottle. People in Northern Ireland sticking effigies of Brendan Rodgers or whoever on a bonfire, putting stuff about Scott Sinclair is what led to those singing, because people amongst the vast majority of fans who probably couldn't give a monkeys about Linfield suddenly wanted to get it right up you to people who behave like that.
That's normal football supporting behaviour.
And I know it's normal human behaviour as well, but that's the nature. It's the reason why I am so dead against the whole concept of strict liability. Because that to me is a mitigation for the behaviour, and if you take the two in context of the Celtic fans did this and it's nowhere near as bad as what you did with the Scott Sinclair, and it was really a bit of get it right up your back at having the way that you behaved with stuff about Scott Sinclair. I get that, but again the defence comes along of, right, but there's no such thing as mitigation to do with UEFA. There's strict liability, and if you do it, you're done. If you don't do it, you're not. And so the Green Brigade knew if they stick that banner up, then we're going to get done. Because there's past history of us getting done for a banner like that.
Yeah, possibly. I'm not sure they did. One thing, you know, I'm sure people who disagree with me listening to this podcast say, well, he's just going off on one now, but I'd be pretty sure that the Green Brigade take some kind of advice when they come up with that idea. I think they probably take some advice from within their own ranks as to whether they would, you know, whether something would happen to them as a consequence. Because there were certain things that they could have put up, which they didn't. If they really wanted to go for it, type of thing.
Yeah, but the minute I saw the banner, I knew we'd get done.
Well, yeah.
The first time I saw the image of the banner, I knew we'd get done. So I understand what you're saying, but then you have to question then you would say, well, you're not very bright. Because I could see that would get us done, because you've done banners in a similar vein that's had us done.
Yeah. Anybody who's producing that kind of stuff, though, they're not daft.
Well, exactly. No, I'm not saying they're daft. So they knew they would get us done. Which then actually gets me into why Celtic have taken the route they've taken to then...
Well,
my own theory is there's two reasons why Celtic have done what they've done. Reason number one is a bit of the Green Brigade, every time Celtic keep saying that section could get closed down if you keep doing this, I think there's been a boy who's cried wolf thought process.
Yeah.
And as somebody said to me the other day, you always have to remember that the moral of that tale is eventually there was a wolf.
Yeah. That's true, but I think if we move into the next sequence, though, and Celtic's response with the official statement on Friday about closing that section, I think we're now getting into the realms of what is under the control of Celtic, what is under the control of Police Scotland, and what is under the what is an appropriate action to be taken in the light of that banner being shown.
My thoughts on everything very quickly for you to then talk around are, one, the flares at the Hearts game completely pissed off Police Scotland. Because internally there'll have been some balls booted, I bet you. That how were they allowed to get away with doing that? You guys are supposed to be policing that section and you allowed that to happen. That then leads to...
Can you just stop there? Because that actually makes me laugh.
No, I'm just being practical of...
Yeah, that might be the juvenile still in me, Harry, but if you were somebody who wanted to get the flares in to really kind of finish that banner off and that display off, then you would just be laughing your head off that you'd done it. That's just the nature of mischief.
Oh, I know. I'm not defending. I'm just painting a picture as to how I think we've arrived at where we are. So my perception of it is that they've done this because, you know, getting back to the juvenile element, almost to use the analogy of kids misbehaving on the very, very last day of school because they're not going to get punished because it's the last day of school before the summer breakup. So it's a very, 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 very last game of the season, so we can really get away with it now, right? The police have been probably relaxing to the standing section, the Green Brigade section, as the season has gone on, because their natural perception that that's an area that's going to kick off hasn't proved to be correct since the Palestinian flags.
Not convinced about that, actually.
I think
people would have a different view of that if from within that section.
No, but I'm just saying this is what my perception.
Okay, fair enough.
So they haven't been as thorough as they could have been on checking for stuff. The flares go in and somebody's turned around and said, how the fuck did that happen? You're supposed to be stopping that type of shit happening. Balls have been booted. And internally within the police force, well, we'll teach them a lesson next time. Right?
Oh, yeah, I can see that scenario. Yeah.
So next time there's games at Celtic Park, Linfield game, there is an excessive police presence where the police are looking for any excuse to then report up the line to the Celtic security, and a bit of a, you know, having a go at Celtic as well by letting the safety certification people know. Well, you know, a bit like when a, you know, you get stopped by a policeman because he thinks you're speeding in your mobile phone, and then he finds a fault on your brake light, you know, that type of concept. I'm going to find a fault here. That's what I'm going to do. I am going to find a fault, no matter what it is. That there's been that element chucked into the policing of the Linfield game, where the police have then been looking for a fault to find.
Yeah.
All of that chucked in together, and either the police or the safety certification people or UEFA have implied to Celtic, and I'm not commenting on the rights of wrongs, I'm just saying what my guess is to some of the decision-making processes, have implied to Celtic that they are going to recommend a temporary closure of it. And Celtic have turned around and thought, well, we don't want that happening if we qualify for the Champions League, because we want that section filled for Champions League games because of maximising income and because of the just the whole atmosphere and everything. So Celtic have taken a preemptive strike of shutting it, of taking some action on, and I'm loosely terming this, the individuals involved, to prevent other people taking it out of Celtic's hands and doing it at a timing that doesn't suit Celtic. I may be reading too much between the lines, but that's my overall look as to why we've arrived the way we've arrived at.
Yeah, there's something in that as a scenario, and I think some of the things that you've mentioned there I definitely would agree with, but actually if you look behind some of those things, that's entirely where the problem resides. So I think your scenario about Police Scotland being completely miffed that the Green Brigade had done what they did at the Hearts game, so that they take kind of more punitive action, if you like, but all of the eyewitness reports around the home leg were that the police were the people that were standing in those aisles, for which UEFA received for which UEFA issued a disciplinary against Celtic. It wasn't the support that was standing in the aisles, it was the police. And why were the police standing in the aisles? Because the thing is, as a corporate entity, there's enough history in this to know that police, and particularly at football, always want to be seen to be the ones that are in control of that situation. And they were, particularly at football, they will do anything that they feel necessary to maintain that control. And it's one of the few kind of situations, if you like, where there is a crowd of people who are policed in a way that is totally different from the way in which crowds of people are policed at other events. And, you know, we've not got enough time to go into it in this podcast, but the policing of Celtic supporters at Celtic Park and at away games is completely unacceptable in so many ways. It's completely over the top. The continual filming of Celtic supporters at games is in itself is absolutely outrageous. And what Celtic have never ever done, or appear to have done, and I think this is possibly because of the way in which the head of security and safety is set up at Celtic, there has never been a kickback by the club around the policing policy at Celtic games. You just stand back from it all and think about the crowds that go to Celtic for home games. And in any other country, it would be about the policing of the away support. There are so few away supporters who come to Celtic games that there is actually a strong case to say there doesn't need to be any police inside the ground at most Celtic home games. But we don't see that. We actually see more police. So who is ever going to challenge that? And the only people that I ever see challenging that are the people usually who are in what is now the full standing section. and particularly the Green Brigade.
But then I sit not far from the Green Brigade. I will see 3-4 police officers maximum going to and from the game. The reason I say that is because for the vast majority of fans, they go to and from the game with hardly seeing any police officers.
Yep.
They just see the minimum amount that would make you think, well, there needs to be this number of people, this number of police here, because there are 60,000 people. I would see this number of police at a big concert.
Yep. But there are other clubs outside of Scotland. Let me, I don't know, pick one off the top of my head. Crystal Palace are pretty well known now for having quite a large ultra section. In actual fact, if you watch Crystal Palace games on the TV, you can actually see the ultra section. They're down to the left behind one of the goals. And you look in there and you will not see any police. Now, typically, those Crystal Palace ultras are doing almost, you know, different songs, obviously, but they're doing almost kind of 90-95% of what the Green Brigade are doing at home games. So it's, you know, it's very choreographed, jumping up and down, etc., etc. But there's no police there. And I've been waiting for quite a few years now, probably coinciding with when the Green Brigade first came on the scene and policing started to escalate around that. I've been waiting for people to ask the question of Police Scotland and to be seen to be actually challenging that. Because it isn't the police's job to dictate that.
But isn't this compounded by things like the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act?
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
Which then terms a lot of the songs that are sung by that, by the, well, if we simplify things to make it easier for the purposes of this discussion, the majority of people who would sing songs that are likely to fall foul within a Celtic Park context, that are likely to fall foul of the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act, will be in that section. And so the police's argument would be, well, that's the section that's breaking the law of the land on a semi-regular basis, so that's where we've got to put our resources. They also take flares into games, as demonstrated at the Hearts game. Flares are illegal, they are dangerous, and we need to put a stop to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I agree with you about the Offensive Behaviour at the Football Act. But I actually think the police have moved on from that because they've actually received a few bloody noses in the courts because they've been found to be literally trumped up charges against Celtic supporters that they've lost out on. So I can only imagine that kind of procurator fiscal is getting more and more reluctant to actually take some of these things to court.
But it does get back to the steps. I mean, the way Celtic have administered this and a blanket ban to 900 people.
Well, that actually literally is the, you know, the icing on the shit cake. Because basically, and what we're seeing now is kind of through anecdotes that the letters have gone out to the 900 people in that section, and so we're finding out now that some of those people receiving those letters, there's two things that have happened. One is they weren't even at that game because they were out of the country on holiday. But the second thing is what we're finding out is that it's not a two-game ban, because actually their season tickets have been deactivated, so it prevents them from getting tickets to other games in the period that the two games are over. So, for example, we've got the Sunderland friendly on Saturday. Now, I've seen it mentioned today that actually the club have said that any of those 900 who've bought tickets for that game, those tickets will be deactivated. Now, I don't know whether they can do that, because presumably that involves Sunderland's involvement. So at the moment, realistically, those 900 supporters, and let's remember many of those will be going to both home and away games, are going to be missing out on six games probably through this ban. And also, if you read the letter, it says it's an indefinite ban.
Although it does then make some reference about hoping to review before the Hearts game.
Yeah. Now, the final thing for me on all of this, having got to this situation, I think regardless of what position we all take on this, we're all standing back and saying, well, how on earth can a club that was on an absolute high be starting the season with what is just an increasing amount of bad will and division? And again, I can see the media kind of like circling the wagons on that, because one thing that they've loved over the years is they've always loved the division between the Celtic support and the club, because there are those people in the media who will see that as the kind of Achilles heel for weakening Celtic. But I just can't understand why Celtic have made some of the decisions that they've made in the way that they've made. I think my final point on this, and you can come back and disagree with me if you want, but I actually think the Celtic supporters liaison officer is not being allowed to fulfil his role in this, and it's quite clear from some of his replies to individual supporters on social media that it's all completely out of his hands. Well, my understanding of the reason why those roles were set up at football clubs, and it's a UEFA directive, as far as I understand, I don't think that he's being allowed to undertake the role where he gets the feedback from that element of the support and kind of shapes the debate, if you like, with the club. And the club take those things on board. And I actually feel sorry for the guy, because it's quite clear that he had no involvement in the original moving of the Linfield away game. He's had no involvement in the decision to ban indefinitely. And he's got no involvement in dealing with the individual supporters of those 900 who actually are completely innocent. And part of me, well, a lot of me says, actually, do you know what? All of those 900 supporters are innocent.
Well, a few things on that. One, just as you were speaking there, I think from memory, and this is not trying to absolve anyone from any responsibility, I think from memory, only because I follow him on Twitter, I think John Paul was on holiday.
He was.
During the Linfield stuff. Right? So, wasn't around to be involved in the decision making. So, I don't. Because actually, my experience of interacting with Celtic is that JP's quite high up in the discussion levels at the club of direct feedback to and from Peter Lawwell and out. That's my experience of interacting with Celtic. My experience of things as well is that JP meets regularly with the Green Brigade. I may be telling tales out of school, I don't know. My understanding is that JP and the Green Brigade meet quite regularly. And last time we had a major blow up over when the Green Brigade were shut out for a couple of games. I think, and I've not been told this is just reading between the lines of things that I read and heard at the time, that there was assurances by the Green Brigade given back to JP as part of them coming back into the ground that they would not directly show him the banners, that they were taking into high-profile games. But they would give him a heads-up as to what was likely to be on the banners.
Mm.
And on at least one occasion, I know of, they have given him a heads-up that's been completely false.
Right.
Previously, not this game. So my understanding is that's the way the relationship works, that they're not going to not tell him, but they do give him a bit of advance warning on that this is the general theme of what our banner's going to be. And so there's more dialogue takes place than some people are happy to allow to, or some people want people to think is out there, is my understanding of it. But the overriding thing for me is we've had past experience of the implications of strict liability on banners, and they must have had an idea that the banner that they did would at the very least be sailing close to the wind.
Yeah, and as I say, my take is that I don't think they're daft, and I actually think that they would take some advice on that from within their own people, if you like.
Oh, and I also understand this is the other challenge of the people who head up the Green Brigade, in inverted commas. If you continually toe the path, you know, this, let's just get into the practicalities of it. If you want to be an Ultras fan group, but you were to continue to say, no, we can't do that banner because it might upset the club,
you'd sit in the main stand.
Correct. So this then gets back to, I say the number of this debate is, does football want Ultras fans in there or not? Because what would then end up happening is the people who are currently the sort of leaders of the group, for want of a better way of putting it, they'd be there, coup d'etat, and they'd be chucked out.
Yeah.
If they were continually saying, or there'd be a, you know, People's Front of Judea and all that stuff would start up, because there'd be a brigade of the Greens would then start
exactly.
up to then do their own banner because they don't agree with the Green Brigade. I appreciate you. That's the dilemma of having an inverted commas Ultras group.
Yeah.
I mean, I do, and I think in all sides of it, I think there's been some extremes of dialogue online. Yeah.
I agree. And actually, you know, I'm quite happy to have discussions about it. I think it's very, very difficult to discuss the issue via Twitter. I think there are people who kind of, you know, okay, everybody's free to write what they want, but I think some of the blogs that I've read, you know, are just too one-sided, and it's a quick attempt, in my view, just to see a black and white world where, you know, Green Brigade bad, Celtic good, you know, grow up the Green Brigade. But I think your last point actually highlights what an Ultras group is about. You know, they are going to be edgy. You know, and there may be some point in the future that they put something up that I just look at it and I think, do you know what? That's not for me. But I'm not going to lose sleep over it, and I'm not going to go crying to anybody complaining about it.
But you equally, there's also been, to the other extreme, PLC bad, Green Brigade great. From this is just the excuse that the board have been looking for to get rid of the Green Brigade. That's why they spent £1 million converting to a standing section, because they never wanted an Ultras group adding to the atmosphere in the first place.
Yeah, but that's just me and my 10,000 Twitter accounts. seriously, I've seen that, you know, and you know, I mean, I recognise the investment, I recognise what Celtic did, but actually, would we have ever had a safe standing section without the Green Brigade? Answer, probably not.
Yeah, but then prior to that, they facilitated that by allowing the Green Brigade to by allowing the changing of season books so oh, yeah, that people yeah, could come, yeah, which, coalesce together. They facilitate the Green Brigade being in the one spot at Hampden.
Yep.
You know, so this concept of the board hate the Green Brigade and the Green Brigade hate the board, this dialogue that happens between the two, you know, it's almost like this isn't Middle East peace talks we're talking about here.
No. No, and I agree with all that, Harry. But actually, I still believe that there are certain things that the Green Brigade, quite rightly, in my view, feel antagonised over. And that actually isn't Celtic's direct control, because I actually think it comes back to a policing issue.
It's like Celtic Research made a point that I have made for some time. For years, football is overcharged by the police, getting back to you, the amount of police around. And Celtic Research made the point, he goes in the standing section.
He does, yep.
And I've just said it, I've had some more clarity, I didn't quite grasp. It's just 900 people towards the front of the standing
That's
section
right.
that have received
yeah.
a letter. So there are other people in the standing section who will be unaffected by this.
Anybody above the exits in the standing section hasn't been banned.
Yeah.
Everybody below the exit section, the exits in that section is the 900.
But Celtic Research made the point. He regularly goes to games with a rucksack on his back.
Yep.
He couldn't tell you the last time it was checked.
No.
And that is one of my points. If you've got the police and you've got all this filming, why are they not? And getting back to the point we've discussed before about I'll see three or four police officers on the way to a game, and you know I just accept that that's the level of policing you would expect in a 60,000 ground. But there's a greater concentration of police around that section.
Yeah.
If that's the section where the flares are going to be, and the in inverted commas illicit banners are going to be, what I don't understand then is why there's not a greater searching by the police that we pay so much money for to check for illicit banners. If the issue is banners are illicit, by being illicit they are therefore not allowed. Flares are illegal, by being illegal they are therefore not allowed. There's pretty much only going to be one section of the ground based on history that they are going to be in, hence the reason why there's an excessive police presence there. So what I don't understand therefore is, if we pay all this money for additional police, why are they not doing additional searches in that one section?
Well, there is quite a bit of searching goes on there, though.
Well, certainly not, patently not enough to stop all these illicit bandits getting in for every single UEFA game.
No.
And flares getting in for high profile
games.
That comes back to
your earlier point that what will have hacked the police off is entirely what you said earlier about the Hearts game and the pyro being there. And so somebody didn't do their job. And you know, it's not having a downer on the police particularly, but I've just seen so many instances over the years that the police as a collective entity will say, well, you know, we're going to take a sledgehammer to crack a nut on this because we've got to be seen to be in control. So that culminates in what you saw on Wednesday, where you can see all the pictures on social media. It's the police that are blocking the walkways.
Now, the one glimmer of light at the end of the, well, there's more than one glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel for me on this. One glimmer
quite
of light.
Intense, this.
We've been here before, where the Green Brigade have been banned, and they've come back in. As you know, in any type of heated debate between people, when people then start making public statements or statements that get into the public domain, the statements that get into the public domain have got to have nobody. Each side wants to be able to make it look as though they didn't do the climb down, but there's got to be sufficient scope within what they're saying that facilitates each side to give a bit to reach a compromise that you can move on.
Yep.
I did see that slightly in both the statements of the Green Brigade and the letter from Celtic.
Mm.
For me, the statement of the Green Brigade said a lot of blah, blah, blah. We thought about it long and hard, but we went and did it anyway because till the last rebel Wolfie Smith, we are the people, all that stuff. So their statement said that, but didn't quite say get it up, you Celtic, which it could have done.
No, and I think what the Green Brigade want is, what they said was they want, they've been constantly calling for a meeting with Peter Lowell.
Yeah, and...
And I've seen some things today from some of the more prominent, well, not necessarily more prominent members, but people who I know who are pretty close to Green Brigade, who I know they've been trying to get a meeting this week. And one of the reasons why they've been trying to get a meeting this week is because some of them are quite hacked off at this issue of potentially losing out on six games rather than it being just the two. So I think you're right. I think, you know, the way in which they kind of weave these words together is very much around, well, we know that we've got to sit round a table at some point. And I suspect that the Green Brigade will raise some of the issues that we've been talking about in this podcast. I think they will roll it back to some of the earlier decisions that were taken.
And Celtic's letter makes a point of saying we hope to have dialogue before the Hearts game. Mm. So they're both talking about wanting to have dialogue. My guess is that they will sit down and, as you say, the Green Brigade will make the points they will, and that Celtic might well turn around and say, look, at the end of the day, we're in charge of our stadium and you always thought we were at it. Well, it wasn't an idle threat. We had Banji. And I suspect part of the reason why Celtic feel confident that they can do that now, worst case scenario, they'll get a season book waiting list.
I mean, again, people have commented on that, which actually, my logic says Celtic, although, you know, you might argue, well, they don't care who they punt the season tickets to, I think in this particular case, Celtic will want to make sure that they have something like an entity called the Green Brigade, because actually, if you look at what they've done, and all those people, you know, kind of quite happy to trot out all those pictures of the stadium tifos on European nights that are all, you know, all being instigated by the Green Brigade. The Green Brigade, whether they like it or not, have actually become part of the Celtic brand.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I think that some of the comments people have made about the PLC wanting to get rid of them, I don't think they do.
No, I agree with that. I don't think they do, because actually, you know, it's kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, really. If you cast your mind back, and again, we've probably not got time to talk about the demographics of this, but actually, Celtic Park was becoming a bit of a morgue until the Green Brigade came along, and the only time that it wasn't particularly a morgue was on European nights. So actually, the Green Brigade, some people are not like me saying this, but they almost reinvented the atmosphere at what we might call routine Celtic games, because it had just disappeared. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that was down to the demographic. You know, and it's about different generations of supporters. We supported the team in a slightly different way when we were in our kind of teens and twenties than we do now.
Yeah, so I think this is as much. Green Brigade showed what they can, that they can do, the flares, and they can, you know, we'll stick a banner up because we want to, has been more or less what they've said every time we got into trouble. I think this was Celtic as much turning in and say, we've threatened you. There you go. And I also think there was an element of Celtic doing this before I do think there's an element of Celtic doing this
before somebody else intervened.
Before somebody else intervened and made us have to do it during Champions League games. As your group stage games. I think it was as much to do with that.
I think we should put to bed, though, I don't think Celtic are anywhere near a ground closure, which is what a lot of people use as kind of like the emotive argument against, you know, what the Green Brigade have done. You've only got to look across UEFA competitions. It takes an awful lot.
I don't think we've got a great... I do think with 10 charges in 6 years, we're probably not that far... We probably weren't that far away from an enforced closure of, for example, 1,000 seats.
I don't think UEFA work like that. I don't think they operate like that.
Well, they did it to Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich had a banner that was largely larger than an A3 sheet of paper about Arsene Wenger and Arsenal, a homophobic banner, and they got 3,000 seats closed.
Right, I missed that. Okay, but again, you see that if that banner was, you know, out and out homophobic, then, you know, UEFA would take that action because, as you pointed out earlier, you know, those are, if you like, the corporate issues for them now. Racism, homophobia, sexism, those kind of things.
I do also wonder whether there was an element also of the fact that the banners of the Green Brigade were being referred to as paramilitary banners.
Yeah.
Might have had... Now, I know that...
Again, that's just...
But I know that every single time Celtic get a headline about illicit banners, they get a call from their corporate, every single one of their corporate partners, PR department, phone Celtic and ask about it. Every one of them. So I do wonder whether Celtic got an excessive numbers of calls from PR departments because they were being referred to as paramilitary banners.
Well, you could be right there.
And again, this might be part of the, no, we definitely don't agree with paramilitary banners. In fact, we're so annoyed by it, we're actually banning those people for 2 games.
Yeah, possibly. I'm busy throwing hints that he keeps missing. Don't have to think about it if I want a kiss and everything around it, but he's too distant. I wanna feel his body, you know I can't resist it.
Sugar Babes, Push the Button, that's just singing just now, well, Dare Not, Olsen Arts, cover of it. Anyway, if you want your covers in or new music, if you email podcasts@celticunderground.net, or you can tweet at Harry Brady CU, or you can tweet anybody about anything. If you want something, us to talk about something in the podcast, that's fine. Just email in or tweet and we'd be delighted to get it off to you. That may have sounded a bit abrupt, the ending there, but that's just because it was the middle section from the chat that Hallboy and I had. There'll be more podcasts along soon, as always. Hopefully we'll be talking about some really good feel-good factors about Celtic victories in the coming wee while. And hopefully there'll be something positive on the title stripping stuff. Don't want to sound particularly glum about this, but I have my doubts, because even if we want to do something, it sounds very much to me like the rest of Scottish football couldn't give a fuck. And I do like to have some relevance to music that plays on the podcast, even if it's very tenuous. If you look back, some of it is. Anyway, the reason for Push the Button cover version this week is I have heard from some people that the rest of Scottish football couldn't care less, and the only way anything might possibly happen is if Peter Lawwell goes nuclear, is the phrase I've heard. So that's for Peter. Push the Button. This is me, Harry Brady. That was him, Hallboy, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
control.